There we go. While our panelists are coming up on the stage, I wanted to thank everyone for coming out tonight, and a huge thanks to the folks at Encircle Films for doing all of the legwork to get these showings organized. And I wanted to give you a bit of a sense of why we are screening this documentary here now for the second time. And that is because Lane County has really become ground zero in the fight against corporate medicine. As many of you know, last month, Eugene Emergency Physicians, which is a local, independent, democratic group of healthcare providers, just renewed their contract with Peace Health, with the local hospital, after what was really a bruising three months that culminated in a court battle over the meaning and application of Senate Bill 951, which is Oregon's anti-corporate medicine bill that was signed into law in 2025. As Judge Kasabai was just about to issue an injunction, Peace Health went to the negotiating table with EEP, and this was really an unqualified win for independent democratic physician groups. And in a conflict that led to the ouster of a hospital CEO, multiple instances of perjury by corporate physician administrators on the witness stand, and a judge that had to rule with an iron fist over what was essentially an unruly courtroom. At the same time, and rewinding a couple of years, thousands of Lane County residents lost their primary care doctors when a corporate group, Optum, took over Oregon Medical Group. And local physicians, many of whom had practiced in this area for decades, retired or left the area rather than work for Optum. And to this day, Lane County is really a primary care desert. I have colleagues at the University of Oregon who, you know, were hired in the last 2 years who have decent health insurance, but have realized that they don't have a primary care physician, and they have resolved to simply go to urgent care when they get sick. And so we've got many people in this community who are forced to use urgent care or go to the emergency room to get treatments that they would otherwise get from a primary care physician. So Lane County has really seen its defeats and its victories when it comes to corporate medicine. And that's one of the reasons that we wanted to bring this documentary to town. And joining me on the stage, we have Dr. Todd Otten, who is a family care physician, an author, and also executive producer of Suck It Up, Buttercup. Yay! We've got Dr. Julie Sayo, who is a partner in Eugene Emergency Physicians. Dr. Anna Lee Bodges, also a partner in Emergency Medicine Physicians. And Dr. Genevieve Berang, who works for ORCID, which was featured in the documentary. Thank you for joining us tonight, the four of you. And my first question is really for the non-executive producers in the group. So we've just watched a documentary that covers so much, you know, from the mental toll that that being a healthcare provider takes on you, to the economic structure of medicine, to learned helplessness on the part of physicians and patients. And so I was wondering, for the three of you, what resonated the most in this film that you saw tonight? Got my timer going off.
Okay, there we go. Oh man, that was a good question. And it's a hard question to answer.
I think I went into medicine to help people. I wanted to help people feel better. And I expected long hours and late nights and time away from family. But one of the things I didn't expect was continually feeling like I was pushing against a system that I couldn't win against. And so thinking about how so many systemic barriers are placed in front of patients that really shouldn't be, that was validating to see acknowledged.
Yeah, I agree. I think the burnout aspect of everything really resonates. And I think a lot of anybody in medicine has at some point been burnt out in one way or another. And in the emergency department particularly, we kind of see all of the aspects of where healthcare fails. And right now in Lane County, we're seeing it failing in the regard of primary care, like you mentioned, Gretchen. And it's just hard to be to want to improve things and help patients, and really the lack of resources in the area makes it so difficult to do so.
Just to piggyback on what Annalise said, I think one of the things that the emergency department is a profound example of, like, the failure of the healthcare in the local area. We call it like the canary in the cave, in the sense that, you know, we see all the failures of lack of primary care, lack of access, and, you know, there's plenty of patients that we see, like, I tried to get that MRI and I just can't get it. And I've tried to get the medicine, I just don't have a primary care physician. And all the backlogs and things like that, I think that's very disheartening at that time. And I think the movie definitely focuses on that. And I think that's very sad that we could see in the emergency department.
Thank you. Dr. Otten, you went from being a healthcare provider to an author, and now you find yourself the executive producer of a documentary, which I think, talking to you earlier, it sounded like you were asking yourself, how did I get here? Could you tell us a little bit about your story and what inspired you to make this film?
Sure, and I promise I won't read my CV to everybody here. But I was in the U.S. Navy, went to a critical access hospital, and part of my why is I went through really horrendous burnout in 2019. You know, as a physician, it's a privilege to take care of other human beings, and most of my career, it's been an absolute joy. But when I was burned out, I hated my job. I remember sitting in the backyard in tears, not wanting to go to work. It was awful, absolutely awful. I recovered, and in 2022, my toxic employer decided they were gonna move me back to where I had gotten burned out. And so I drew a line in the sand for myself, my colleagues, others, and walked away. Since then, I've worn multiple hats. I still deliver direct primary care. I work for DD Group and do a ton of advocacy and nonprofit work. You saw in the film that I've lost four of my colleagues to suicide in my career, and including two close friends. So I'm incredibly driven to make change. And part of the reason for that is the frustrations I saw from patients on a daily basis when I was in the fee-for-service world. And that's a big part of what we're trying to accomplish with this film, is to get people to understand what's going on so they're educated. Frankly, to get a little pissed off about what's going on, frustrated, but to get activated and participate in change. I don't know if you noticed it, but as the film progressed, the first lower third, there was one dot, and then another dot connected, and another dot connected, and by the end, you saw all these dots coalesced into what we like to call an impact network. And that's really what we're trying to facilitate here. And I applaud the local ED group, EEP, and what they did. You talk about a David versus Goliath story, but leveraging leveraging all these different resources, whether it's social media or legislators or politicians, to push back against the bullshit that's going on. It's incredible. Last night I told the small group that they were heroes, and I believe that, and we all can be heroes. We all can play our part. I want to boil the ocean when it comes to healthcare.
Thank you. Dr. Seo, as a partner in EEP, could you tell us a little bit about how you feel after going through this tremendous threat to your career? And are there lessons for other doctors? Other doctors could learn about your experiences.
I think we're still kind of recovering from what happened. I think we're all trauma bonded for life, I think. And I think the most important thing that I could relate to everyone is how proud I am of our group. And I think the first thing that made this successful campaign is we all believed in each other and we actually stuck together as a group. And I believe it's the quality of the people that we've had in our group that allowed us to do that. We believed in each other, we trusted in each other. And I don't want to say anything else about how other groups have survived, but we're one of the very first people that actually stuck together and won and fought against because we didn't give up. We stuck together and we said, we're going to do this together. And we were brave enough because we trusted each other that we were going to find courage within each other, because a lot of people are in so many different financial states, right? Because medical school is $100,000 a year. There's providers that are $800,000 in debt. They have mortgages, they have two young kids, and we're just all people. We have to pay for our bills. And we just really wanted to take care of the people that we trained to do. And we just really cared about the community. And because we focused on that, our commitment to community and our commitment to each other, I think we were able to stick together. And I think I am just so proud to be part of a group that is so multifaceted and talented. I know we have media gurus, we have writers in our group, and we have people who can do legislation. And I am so proud of how we had all hands on deck and we've tried to approach this problem in every facet. Like, we were actual ER doctors trying to figure out this problem, and we took it one step at a time, and we just didn't give up. And I'm really grateful for the legislation that passed in 2025 that allowed us to have a foothold and actually have some traction. And we're really hoping that we could continue with legislative progress regarding this bill and have more teeth to have a part of the bill that allows us to actually enforce the law instead of just having the law. It was a budget constraint, and hopefully we could push more so we could be able to not have to end up using using a lawsuit to actually get some traction. So we're looking forward to that. And I think we're all just grateful, and we're taking a big sigh of relief. But right now during the summertime, it's just all hands on deck, try to make sure that we provide the best care. And we are so grateful to be part of this community that supported us and that, you know, all rallied together. And I'm just so grateful that we are here.
Dr. Bodges, the documentary shows us so vividly how corporate medicine, how private equity, how insurance companies have led to the erosion of medical care. As a practicing physician, do you feel that corporate medicine has been a threat to your relationship with patients?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think we were kind of like whispering like how glad we are we don't have to deal with prior authorizations, I'm sorry, in the emergency department. But I mean, we do in some realm in that, you know, people come to the ER because their prior authorization to get the MRI that they needed failed, or and they do need that imaging study, and you know, some somebody on behind a phone somewhere said that they couldn't get it. And then, you know, I have been in that position where I've ordered that MRI for the patient and then the administrator told me not to, and maybe the insurance company was correct. And I think it's, we just really, it's a challenge for everybody, but particularly for the patients. And it's just, it's really difficult to see. And then, you know, of course, with everything that in the last few months with Apollo, I think it was really amazing to see, to watch in the courtroom, just the disintegration of the facade that they had, that I think Judge Kasubai did a really good job of just sort of like disintegrating this facade of, you know, they were not corporate medicine, and that was their tagline, and it was an illusion. And I think it was really fascinating to see that kind of fall away.
Thank you. Dr. Behring, here in Oregon, I mean, we seem to be in an unusual context. We've got the strongest corporate medicine laws in the country, and they are poised to become stronger. We've got Dr. Glaucon Flecken living in this state. We've got groups like ORCID, which are really trying to do medicine and primary care in a different way. Could you talk a little bit about ORCID, and then maybe talk about ways in which medical practices like billing and prior authorization do influence your practice style, if they do?
No, absolutely. So I have worked under kind of three different models in my career so far. During my residency, I worked at an FQHC in Flathead County, Montana. So very low access to medical care. Most people either did not have health insurance or were on state health insurance. After that, I came to work for Oregon Medical Group at Optum. That job was not a good fit for me, and so I left, and one of my colleagues actually had taken a job with ORCID, and he was really happy where he was. I think two of the strongest things about ORCID are that Orion and his colleague Oliver is now on the board of directors. He doesn't take as much of an active role in overseeing the company. But I think Orion understood that, kind of like I said before, people go into medicine to help people. And if you give them the tools to do so you give them a manageable workload, if you give them the support that they need to address multiple aspects of care. So for example, at my clinic, we have a community health worker who helps people who don't have insurance or have unstable housing, get insurance, help with groceries. We have a behavioral health worker who addresses the psychotherapy part of mental health. And we have a care manager. So we have a nurse who works to do triage. And then also she does a lot of lifestyle medication classes. So he gave the clinics the tools that they needed to be successful. So he kind of gave us a clinic and then got out of the way. And he has also always been really receptive to feedback, not only from providers, from doctors, nurses, nurse practitioners, PAs, but from medical assistants, from PSS at the front desk. The other thing that was really unique about ORCID, they talked kind of in the documentary about the business model of medicine, because in the US, medicine is a business. ORCID is very transparent with their finances. So, usually once a month, we have our 2 monthly staff meetings. One of those staff meetings is partially dedicated to, okay, here's the budget for our clinic, here's how much we brought in, here's what we spent on medical supplies, here's what we spent on building repairs, here's what we spent on salaries. So it's easier to see where the money is going, and when you feel it, it allows people to feel invested. And when people feel invested in a company and they feel like the company values them, they're willing to go above and beyond for it. As far as prior authorizations go, those are the bane of my existence. Sometimes you just kind of have to laugh at how ridiculous they are. I think they I am lucky enough that we have a referrals and billing department who handles most of the paperwork about it. But a lot of it does come back to me to give the rationale to sign my name. And it just, it's a time suck. I think case in point for prior authorizations, I had a patient who was diagnosed with breast cancer. She needed an MRI to get the surgery. The insurance denied the MRI because she had not had surgery to remove the tumor. I could go on.
Yeah.
Dr. Otten, do you think that we are at an inflection point? Is this the beginning of a movement to change healthcare in the U.S.?
Are we at an inflection point? Yes. I mean, I think in some cases it's already passed. There are medical deserts, there's obstetrical deserts, rural hospitals are closing all over the place on a regular basis. So, you know, you saw the picture of the ambulance going off the cliff. I think in some cases that's already happened. And, you know, people are dying as a result of it, frankly. Do I hope this is the start or continuation of a movement or several movements? Absolutely. The timing, I think, couldn't be better, honestly. The frustrations across the country are at a boiling point. And in that regard with the film, I feel like we lucked out. But the reality is, without everybody in this room playing a part, change won't occur. And so we need you. We need your voices. Even if it's as simple as thanking the physician who did a prior auth. It matters. Your voice matter, your words matter. That's why when we were creating this film, I got a fair amount of pushback about what's the call to action. It needs to be something in 3 months, 6 months, 12 months. And I'm sitting there going, this isn't gonna be fixed in 12 months. This might not even be fixed in the rest of my life. You know, we wanted something evergreen, and that's why unlearning learned helplessness was one of the calls to action, because that's a choice we can all make in this room, right? And then accelerating an impact network, again, has been embodied here in the local area with the work that's been done by EEP. And maybe I'll leave it on a light note. I have filled out a prior authorization in CRAN before. And it went through.
Wow. I, at this point, I'd like to open up the questions, audience questions. We have about 15 minutes or so.
Can you remind us of what the Oregon law is that you keep referring to? Because I'm not familiar with it.
Yeah, and I would possibly are the legislative branch or a representative from EEP, Dr. Seo, can speak a little more to that. But
it is very good. I'm a doctor, not a lawmaker, and at times I had to ChatGPT what this SB 951 actually stands for. But it's actually a bill that originated from 2020 when United Health, who owned Optum, bought out Oregon Medical Group, and majority of the primary care physician did leave, and Eugene and Springfield had this health desert. And they were trying to make sure that corporate medicine does not have a foothold in the state of Oregon. There was other types of corporate takeover regarding anesthesia group in Portland that prevented 2,000 surgeries to be done because corporate medicine and staffing companies says, oh, we can make sure that we staff up. And they were unable to fulfill that promise, and 2,000 surgeries were not done in Portland. So a lot of legislators realized the impact of corporate medicine in Oregon, and they wrote this bill that prevented any type of corporate medicine that will come into Oregon and say they will provide health care. So basically, the threshold is the group that provides medical care should be physician-owned, not just physician-led or partially owned, but majority-owned. So that was the main crux of the bill. I believe in 2029, the bill has an addendum where majority of the corporate medicine has until 2029 to change its structure that it is physician-owned. I hope that I clear some of that up.
Does anyone else on the panel want to add to that? I mean,
So I'll add a little bit to this. I mean, there's a lot of shenanigans going on around how care is being dictated and mandated. It's when we talk about contract management groups or corporate medicine. I mean, literally, it could be as simple as one physician in a different state behind a shell company dictating care that's being delivered across the country. And you can just see the flaws associated with that. Staffing gets cut, supplies get cut, reimbursements get cut, and who suffers when that happens? Frankly, we all do, but patients the most. So it's a massive problem that's going on right now, and it's been happening for decades. It's just accelerated.
And in the case of Eugene Emergency Medicine, I mean, Eugene Emergency Physicians and Apollo MD, when Peace Health selected Apollo MD, which was a Atlanta, Georgia-based group, to provide services for this local emergency room, what Apollo MD did is they created a local group without any physicians called Lane Emergency Physicians. And so really the crux of that lawsuit was about whether Lane Emergency Physicians was actually a local independent group or whether it was really just part of this company, this huge behemoth of a company called Apollo MD, you know, whose organizational structure no one, even the CEOs don't understand, right? And that's by design.
So they were trying to make a physician-friendly group. It's a shell corporation, and majority of the decisions, like staffing ratios and who's going to be hired and the scheduling, will be all done in Georgia. So the SB 951 prevents things like that, like a loophole, because basically they were trying to make a loophole, say, hey, we're physician-owned, but it was one physician who was paid by Apollo MD from a different LLC that, you know, you could have one shell company over another. So SB 951 prevents that from happening to make sure that it is locally owned and locally provided physician care. And I think that's the best type of care that we have, right? You know, the people who are providing bedside care, like the nurses and the staff and the EKG techs and the MRI techs, and all those people are the ones that should be able to dictate patient care, not people who are wearing suits, looking at Excel spreadsheets and trying to figure out how they could marginalize the biggest profit. And I think that's what SB 951 is trying to minimize.
Thank you. Any other questions from the audience? Do you want to bring the mic, Eric?
I'm wondering what we can do to help in any way. We do.
How many different ideas do you want me to give you? So that's a fantastic question, and that's, you know, the calls to action are obviously a little bit nebulous in this. It can be as simple as I mentioned earlier, how you interact with your clinician. I mean, literally asking your doctor how they're doing not only might make a difference for that clinician, but it probably buys you another 5 to 10 minutes of them staying in the room. Seriously. It works. You know, writing them a thank you card. They remember this stuff. We're human beings. This stuff matters. But going beyond that, I often talk about time, talent, or treasure, okay? I alluded to a time example there. Talent, expecting everybody to write a book or make a documentary, but perhaps you have a talent that involves connection, or you know somebody that's in legislation that wants to connect with a physician. These are just simple examples. Perhaps it's donating to a nonprofit that you believe in, right? But to be very granular of a place you can look for examples of things to contribute, if you go to the film's website, there's about 70 organizations on there that are divided in different buckets: patient experience, quality care, lower costs, wellness initiatives. that you can explore and find an organization that might resonate with you to participate in. Because if we all do a little bit of something, that's when the needle starts to move. That's when the aircraft carrier starts to turn, right? I don't want to sit here and say, hey, you need to vote for this person or you need to do that thing. I mean, if you lived in New Jersey, I would tell you to vote for Tina Shaw. But we're in Oregon, so that probably doesn't count.
I was just going to piggyback on the one of the things that the documentary, I think, did a nice job of portraying is sort of the divide that health insurance and corporate medicine has placed between physicians and clinicians and patients. And I think just one thing that has been so cool about this whole process is just seeing working as a team with the entire community. And I think that's something that we can all do going forward. And not only like with one-on-one with your healthcare, but then also just, you know, with progressing forward with SB 951 and reminding legislators that we care about this issue, especially in Lane County, where we really do have a healthcare desert. And it's just been a really amazing experience working as a team, and I just want to continue doing that with the community as well. And so, you know, you may not say write your legislators, but write your legislators and vote. And but I think it's going to be a continuous fight for us here in Oregon, and something that we'll continue to do absolutely, but that we want to like work with the whole community to do too.
And I think stories matter a lot. If you are experiencing something that really impacts your life, tell somebody about it. Thinking about the law that was passed that happened because of the United Healthcare Optum takeover at Oregon Medical Group and everybody speaking up. Thinking about the Eugene emergency physicians, like you were saying, that worked because people spoke up.
A specific question about the film, and this is for Dr. Otten. This is such a valuable and important film, and I know that we had a lot of people who wanted to see the film who weren't able to get into one of these two showings. Can you tell us anything about your future plans for the film and distribution and how we could let people know who maybe weren't able to see the film at this time, how they might be able to see the film in the future?
So there's many, many layers to this. Ultimately, you know, one of the major goals of this project is to get it onto a streaming service that has already been started there, but you don't know what you don't know, and you don't know how many layers of delay are going to occur. We anticipate that'll happen in about 3 months, plus or minus, so well before midterm elections, because we do think this has a chance to positively impact those events. In the short term, screenings are popping up all over the place. We're getting requests on a daily basis from all over the country to show this. Many of those will be annotated on the website. One of the other things that we're entertaining doing for those that haven't been able to see it and really want to is to make short-term links associated with some fundraising efforts, et cetera. If you're really interested, I might know a guy who can get you access to this, so you can always reach out to me too. Obviously, I'm serious and joking at the same time. But there's also plans to get this across dozens of major cities in the short term via somebody that specializes in documentaries around social movements. So that was a long-winded answer that there's a multi-tiered strategy to get this out there. Rest assured, one way or another, even if we have to put it on Vimeo ourselves and create links for individuals, it will be available within 3 to 4 months on a wide scale.
Thanks. I think I saw a question over, yes. Third row from the back.
we teach medical students and PA students as well during in the emergency department. And one of the things that we always try to remind them is it is a privilege for us to be able to provide medical care to strangers, especially in the emergency department. I always talk about how I get to meet you for the very first time and ask you the most sensitive questions. And 10 times out of 10, they tell me what it is, you know. And it is a privilege and an honor that we do this. And I think when we are running around with our hair on fire because there's so many patients in the emergency department, just to remind us, just give us a little bit of grace. We're human too. And, you know, we all are gonna be patients at one point. And so, you know, we always try to treat people the way we wanna be treated. So hopefully, as the movement of better healthcare and just local healthcare continues, I hope that, you know, we all just remind each other of that we're all humans and that we all wanna be treated well.
Thank you so much. And I believe that we have run out of our time here in this theater, but I want to thank our panelists and all of you for showing up tonight.
And ladies and gentlemen, the Art House greatly appreciates it if you please collect all of your trash and dishes and take them directly out the door. We do recycle. You can place any cans right in that bus tub next to the trash. Thank you.